everybody. This is John Tatey welcoming you back to Pop Mom, the podcast where culture is relative. Yes, it's time again for my mom, Bonnie Tatey, to share her view of pop culture, small town life, and the riddles of human nature. Of course, on this episode, we discuss the science fiction motion picture Dune Part 2. Let's bring Mom in now. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Got any post office stories for us this week?
No.
No? Well, it's a good thing that I do. I happen to have a post office story, and I thought we could get right into it. So as I believe I've mentioned on the podcast, we are traveling to Japan later this year. So it's time to get passports for the children. And unlike adult passports, you cannot mail in your application. You have to go. Both parents have to go in person with the kids to an acceptance facility, which in practice, at least around these parts, translates to a post office. So I get all the forms in order. I even say to my wife, boy, I've crossed every T and dotted every I on these things. We'll just walk in and swear whatever we have to swear, and we should be ready to go. Huh, right? And so I go online to make an appointment at one of our many acceptance facilities nearby, and the local post office does not have any appointments, really, that are not during school hours. But they do have, it says, walk-in passport hours Saturday, 10 to 11 a.m. And I'm like, great. I'll show up at 10 a.m. on the dot, and hopefully we'll be able to squeeze in there. So I do drag the whole family down to the nearby post office at 10 a.m. on Saturday, and I, in fact, see someone in front of us with a kid holding their hands up and swearing that, you know, everything on the form is true and what have you. So I'm like, wow. So it does happen, right? So I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
And
you have fully expected.
And I expect it to happen. Then the next person goes up and she says she just needs a passport photo. She doesn't have the form. And the person behind the desk says, you need an appointment to have to submit your passport application. The first sign of trouble.
Yeah.
She says, but I can take your photo. So I think, well, she said you need an appointment, which is not what it said on the website. But she also said, sure, I'll take your photo. So right. Maybe she's going to be helpful. Finally, it's our turn to go up there. She says, do you have an appointment? I said, we don't. But I looked on the website and she didn't even let me finish my sentence. She said, I know what it says on the website. You need an appointment to have your passport form processed.
Oh, for God's sake.
I said, well, the kids go to school and the website didn't show any appointments for like another month. All your Saturdays are blocked off. And she said, that's just what we have. And at this point, my lovely wife says, look, we can just pull the kids out of school early one day and come down here and get it taken care of. And I said, I guess if that's what we have to do. So I ask if we can make an appointment. Okay, fine. She says to me, what day do you want? I said, obviously that doesn't matter. Like, what do you have? She starts flipping through. No, not on this date, not on this date. Oh, no, we have a 1 p.m. in like a week. I said, one's not going to work. She keeps flipping through. Now the woman in the next, who's manning the next booth and not helping any customers. Like, there are customers in line behind us, but she's just sitting there watching, eavesdropping on our transaction. She says, you should just go online and do this. I said, hey, we're almost done here. Can we please finish just making this appointment? We're almost there. She said, well, it's not our job.
It is your job.
Well, I'm trying to accomplish something for my family and with my family there. So I'm just like, tamp it down and, you know, get through this. And so after flipping through a million different days where they don't have appointments or only have an appointment at the worst possible time, She arrives at like March 19th. She said, March 19th, 2 o'clock. I said, fine, we'll see you March 19th at 2 o'clock. Now, the woman in the next booth chimes in and says, oh, I'm not coming in that day. There won't be anybody here to actually process them.
Oh, my God.
Now, mind you, if I had taken her advice earlier and said, you're right, I'm sorry for wasting your time, I will go home and book this on the website, I would have gone home and made that appointment and then come in that day, and there would have been nobody there to help me and my two kids and my wife, right?
What is wrong with people? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The irony of this did not strike my friend at the post office, as you might imagine. Anyway, I reached a point, Mom, and I'm glad I have this instinct where something in me just triggered and said, time to leave, 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 get out, because I was so infuriated by this. Well, I'm not going to be here that day. There was no respect left, right? And when there's no respect left, the best thing to do is get out of there before you make an ass of yourself and everyone else. Of course, I was fuming all day because now it's like, well, what do I do? And I go online and look at the like Yelp reviews for the local post offices, and every one of them has something like, I showed up for my passport appointment and there was nobody there, or they were like, getting a passport is apparently impossible. So I just want to say a special F you to the Ravenswood Station Post Office. That said, I was so excited for me to have a post office grievance for the podcast. I was like, this is unbelievable. Something happened to me at the post office for once. So I don't know. A heartfelt thank you as well, Ravenswood Station post office, because it took my breath away how rude they were to me. And, you know, the website, boy, I realized what their approach to the website is. Like, the website is great when it makes me go away, but the website is terrible when it makes me show up, right? Like the website that said, like, walk-in hours 10 to 11, like, oh, that website, don't listen to that website. Right. But if it would make me go away, hey, the website is aces, buddy. Check it out.
Now, do you have to go to your local?
No, you don't. So now what I did is I went in the Byzantine website that the federal government has set up for this that landed me at this post office in the first place, and just kept looking for places until I found a place that was not a post office. And so we have an appointment now at the Niles Public Library, which is like a northwest suburb. So it'll be like a 20-minute drive, but I figured like maybe a library. So I went online for the reviews for this library, and it's like 4.5 stars on Yelp, and the staff is so helpful, and et cetera. And I'm like, great, this is, book the appointment. Then I searched the Yelp reviews for the word passport, and then all the 1- and 2-star reviews came up, and the reviews are like, this is for the passport desk only. So I think the problem is it's just that all these, nobody wants to do passports, so everybody who's doing them, I guess, is forced to do it and hates it. Sounds that way?
I don't know. I'm going to have to really think about that because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I understand you have a little power, and God help anyone that tries to interfere with that, but it doesn't even make sense. You're all, it doesn't make any sense.
Hey, we were there, and while we were there, there was one customer who came up and said, like, I have a package here, and that was all the information he could offer. And, you know, someone else who needed something crazy, and, like, I get that they have to deal with all manner. Like, the post office has to deliver everywhere and has to deal with everyone, right? So I sympathize with that. I do expect to be treated like a human being baseline and to be allowed to finish my sentences. And you're like, you're not in such a hurry to help the customers because you ain't. Like, you're sitting there just kibitzing.
You know, I always want to leave with the satisfaction of throwing the last word. So God bless you.
So do I. That's why I leave. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get that from me. You know, about 3 weeks ago, we were out to breakfast and I saw the guy that plows our driveway and shovels the roof and does the mowing. And I said, hey, you haven't sent us a bill in 2 years. And he said, well, it hasn't been 2 years. And I said, okay, well, you need to send us a bill.
You're trying to pay him, right?
I'm trying to pay him.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So he takes the bill over to Merrick's house, and he expects Merrick to write him a check right then and there for a bill. Now, he maintains 3 good-sized houses.
Okay.
$24,000.
Oh, my God.
He wants Merrick to write him the check.
Wow, he was barking up the wrong tree there. Woo!
And
I would have liked to see that.
Yeah, yeah. And he wants Merrick to call him to come get the check. He doesn't want him to mail it because he doesn't want to talk to. Do you know who he doesn't want to talk to?
The guy at your post office, whose name I forget?
No. The guy that does the plowing. Do you know who he doesn't want to talk to?
Oh, I thought it was the guy at the post office was the answer to that question. I don't know.
Me.
You? Yeah, okay. That should have been my first guess, yeah.
But I'm just trying to get him his money. I'm not being a jerk.
Well, so, was the bill for 2 years?
Yeah, almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years.
A year and 8 months or something like that.
So he was wrong. And you were trying to pay him, and he was snippy about it, it sounds like. And now he's too embarrassed to say, oh, yeah, you owe me this money? Wow. That's...
Well, he wouldn't come here. He went to Merrick.
Yeah.
So Dad got the bill, and he said, I'll have to look it over. And we know how Dad's time frame works. He'll get to it when he's good and ready.
The listeners are really getting a glimpse of the various Tatey family characters right now. Yeah, go ahead.
So Dad handled it in his way, which was not the way I would have handled it.
Right, right. I get your drift.
And Dad let him know, we would like to be billed quarterly in the future. Can you imagine?
$24,000. Wow. I mean... How did he let it go that long? Is he that... The plowing business must be better than I thought.
I guess.
Flabbergasted by that.
I think it could have gone on and on if I didn't jiggle his cage. Because his first reaction is, well, it hasn't been that long. Okay.
Well, because it was an affront to his acumen as a businessman, right? He's like, how dare you?
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, no, that's what it was to me.
I didn't, because we both know he's a shit businessman. He does a good job what he does, but the bill keeping is terrible.
Yeah, well, he doesn't want to have to admit that in front of you. I mean, I'm not saying it's not cowardly. It's hilarious, but...
because I thought that was just a foregone thing. We both know you stink at this.
Yeah, you expected him to say, like, oh, my God, I know I'm terrible about that. I'll get that right to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what false pride to have.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. You know. What do you want to say about handshakes? That's the most intriguing item.
Yes. Well, we did talk about this. Jenna and I went to some place in Maine to meet somebody last week, and... We shook hands,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very bad handshake, and and it got me thinking that...
Well, I need a little more context on the situation. Are you being cryptic because you don't want to embarrass anyone?
I don't think they listen, but it was a business transaction.
Okay.
You know, Jenna sells snuffle mats, and she was going to... She has made an agreement with this facility that is wonderful, really all inclusive for anything you want for a dog, anything. They don't do pets or whatever. And this place is wonderful.
Wait, what? What does that mean? They don't do pets.
They don't do
only wild dogs.
They don't do cats or just dogs.
Oh, okay. They don't do all pets, but you can bring your pet dog there.
And they have a washing, a whole other facility for wash your dog yourself. And I mean, it is
sounds great.
It is fantastic.
Okay.
But the husband had a not good handshake.
A husband. So it's like a husband-wife team.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Describe its not goodness.
Well, he sort of grabbed the first two segments of my fingers and held them very loosely and and then just dropped them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me think, it was startling. Because, you know, a handshake, they can vary, of course.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking, what does a handshake say about you? I discussed this with Dad and you. And we practiced handshaking.
Well, you didn't discuss it much with me. You just asked me if I thought a handshake indicated anything about
anyone. It was the weekend, so I knew to keep it brief.
Okay.
But I was very curious to know your opinion of that. Both you and Dad felt that it said something.
Yeah. A handshake is it's like an affirmation of you being present with this other person. It's like a commitment to, like, we are here with each other right now, and that's the most important thing, which I know it may sound like a lot for a handshake, but the ritual to me is like a physical affirmation of this is a together time right now. And so I don't think a handshake needs to be extra firm. Like, it can be too firm or not firm enough, but it should indicate some presence, I think. So when that's why to me it's awkward when someone comes up short, as this guy did, or is too weak. Yeah. And I don't think it demonstrates like weakness of character or anything like that.
Okay.
I think it's more of a missed connection, or maybe I'll put it that way. Mm. And because I think it's important to carry yourself with respect for yourself and for the other person, I do think a good, solid handshake is a nice arrow to have in your quiver. I don't find it disqualifying if, like, I don't judge a man based on his handshake. When a woman has a bad handshake, I don't think anything of it, to be honest, because I just, and maybe this is the generation that I am, but just from the habits we build up over the course of life, it does mean a little more to me coming from, although I appreciate a good handshake from anyone.
Right.
It's a little more of an important moment for men, I think. Because we don't have that many ways to express what I'm talking about.
Right.
Like, express that I'm present with you. At least in our culture, men don't have a ton of ways to do that. So that's an important moment.
I do feel that way. I take it very seriously. My father taught me how to shake hands in a manner. And I feel like I'm saying to you, I'm willing to press my whole hand against yours, even though you may have just coughed into your hand or run your index finger under your nose or whatever. I'm willing to extend myself to that. I'm willing to open my hand and press it right against your hand because that's the kind of impression you made on me.
I think that's, it's that physical intimacy, if you want to call it that, is an important part of it, too. I'm always intrigued by Larry David's alternative, which is the forearm shake, right? Which I like and I think could, you know, if it were custom, could express the same thing. You are not pressing flesh to flesh, or at least hand to hand in that situation. Although I think some people would find it more intimate.
Now, you said you thought I had a hard handshake.
I think you have a, yeah, yours is toward the firm end of the spectrum, to be sure. It's definite.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So not
I don't
a
think
bad
it's bad. Okay. No.
Okay.
You mean business, though, and your handshake does convey that.
When have we shook hands?
I don't know, but I could picture what it felt like quite well. All right, you know, you say, I will take you to Fun Spot if you wash the dishes for a week. You know, let's shake on it. Yeah. Right. So I think it's that kind of thing that must have come up over the years many times.
All right. And I do think it's important to touch that little soft part at the between the thumb and the finger, the index finger.
That's why the handshake is possible, because that part fits together.
Like a puzzle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel good about that conversation. If anybody has another opinion.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what people think about handshakes. I'm sure there's people who hate them. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It can be stressful, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
But that's okay. A little, you know, lives can have little moments of stress in them. And moments of awkwardness. Here's a moment of awkwardness before we move on. I'll tell this during Dune because it happened when we were at the theater for Dune.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay. Remind me my awkwardness story about Dune.
Okay.
Let's get into it, shall we, Mom?
Yes, let's do it.
This week, Mom and I are talking about Dune Part 2. Frank Herbert's Dune is one of the great works of American sci-fi writing, and it is also famously impossible to film. It's the story of Paul Atreides, a young man who's predestined to lead a galactic jihad, but isn't too sure about the whole thing, to be honest. A 1984 film adaptation by David Lynch is widely considered ambitious, but undercooked and incoherent. Director Denis Villeneuve, practiced that quite a bit before we began, decided he could do better. And one of his tricks was to split the book into two movies. Mom watched Dune Part 2 for this review. Here's a clip.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. We don't have that here. Here, we're equal. Men and women alike. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Muad'Dib Uso. Maybe you could be Fremen. Maybe I'll show you the way.
Dune Part 2 is in theaters everywhere. Visit your local library for a newspaper with the listings. Do they still put the listings in the newspaper? Maybe you got to just go on the internet.
I don't know. You got to find a newspaper.
I don't know. Just start driving till you hit a movie theater and then sit down till they show Dune Part 2. It's not my problem. Figure it out.
It's playing everywhere.
Mom, was Dune A Day at the Beach or was it sand in your eye?
Having reflected a bit on it, I'm going to say it was in the middle of those two things.
Okay. Which they often come together, so.
Yeah, I was not looking forward to it. I was trying to compare it to something I dreaded as much, and it was something dental that I came up with.
Oh, okay. So it usually is.
I wasn't looking forward to this at all. I was so happy. I saw it for $7 in a small theater with huge seats and a great audience. So
great. Yep,
it was all pluses. There were a lot of things I really liked about this movie.
Oh.
And I do not like science fiction.
No.
But
you were doing me a favor with this one. We should
all acknowledge that.
Yeah.
I was very pleasantly surprised. There was no, I didn't know what to expect, okay? I didn't.
Yeah, of course.
I tried to do a little research.
And I thought, I should call Mom and catch her up on the first movie. But like I said in the intro, the story is very hard to tell. And the more I would have talked, the more confused you would have gotten. So I was like, nope, just she can take it as it comes.
And I felt like I understood little sections of the movie and grew to And here's one of the problems. Everybody had too many names for me.
I know. Well, Paul himself does have a lot of names, but yeah, there's like, yeah, everybody has many names.
But you can follow the story. And I have some questions, though. And one I asked you last night is, I don't really understand why they are fighting over this crappy place to live. Is there no place that's has a tree, or is that all gone? Which I'm sure is explained someplace, but
Do cover that in the first movie. Yeah, I mean, you're coming in cold to the second part, and right. I have to tip my cap to you for doing so. This planet that they're on, Arrakis, aka Dune, is the only source of this material, spice, which is required for interplanetary space travel, which they don't really talk about in the movies. And it's this drug that if you're particularly predisposed to it, it can give you visions of the future, among other effects. But it's like the most precious substance in the galaxy. And this is the one place where it is because the sandworms produce it. And this is the only planet where the sandworms.
Oh, I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
So the sandworms are actually good?
Well, they certainly, you know, if you get stuck out in the desert by yourself and don't know what you're doing, they'll certainly gobble you right up. So they're dangerous. Oh, but okay. The Fremen, on Dune have learned to harness them and respect them, venerate them even.
Well, that's good to know, because when I saw them riding them,
yeah,
I thought, wow, that you know, they're good. I don't.
Yeah, well, they kind of are.
So you understand, I have parts that I just was baffled by and parts that were just very charming.
Yeah, no, I think it's great because I think there's people listening who are really into Dune like I am and we're excited about the movie and who don't know it from a hole in the wall and are with you. So I think this is a good, we're bridging the gap. And I'm like, as you know, I got obsessed with the books last year. So I was one of the guys in the theater going back and forth between, oh my God, this is amazing. And some things that were so vivid in the book that I felt like I had seen them before, like the sandworm riding scene. I was like, I have seen this before. And it was rendered that, strikingly and perfectly. Yeah. And then of course there were times where I had my arms crossed and I was like, that's not right. That's not the way it is in the book, which like there's a million things like that. Inevitably, it's not
which
really
make
a
it
criticism.
Hard, I think. Yeah.
But it makes it hard, you know, you'd think I would be well equipped being familiar with the mythology, but actually like I envy the people who went in only knowing maybe these two movies. Because there were a lot of moments where like, wait a minute, is that how it happens?
Yeah.
But that said, I loved this movie and enjoyed the hell out of it. Shoot me some of your other questions.
So that answers the thing about the worms. I asked you this last night, but one, why did the mother's baby never get born?
Oh, yeah. So during the movie and during this like spice ceremony, Paul's mother reveals that she's pregnant and the baby is in the book. The baby is born. And in fact, the like toddler daughter kills a character who dies at the end of this movie and in the book. Someone else kills this character in the movie because I think that Denis didn't want to have to deal with filming a toddler killing a grown man, like, and just like stabbing him. It's a weird image that in the book works and is shocking in the way it's intended, but I think on film wouldn't work as well. So they compress the timeline a lot by not having that baby come out of Lady Jessica, because that means all this happens in like the space of a few months. And that is, you know, it happens over the course of years in the book. But in the movie, it really gets compressed to what might seem like an unnaturally short time frame for this young man to essentially rise to the pinnacle of this existing civilization.
Well, the baby seemed so mysterious that it was telling things and talking to the mother that I actually thought that that was going to be the culmination. That was going to be the end of the movie, that this baby. And instead, they just announced, here comes another world war. And it was like, oh, man, really?
The end.
The end. The one thing that was very hard is probably for the last half hour of the movie, I had to tinkle so much, but not knowing what time it was, or, you know, you lose track of all that. And I didn't want to take my phone out and be rude and look at the time. And so I really had to go to the bathroom for the last half hour. And I was so relieved when they, when the black came on the screen that I just raced out of there. That's a personal.
You know, that's the thing about living on Dune. You could go right in your still suit. That's what they're for. Yeah. Reclaim that moisture.
I could have gone right in my seat, I guess.
Yeah. That's pretty futuristic, huh? Don't got to go to the bathroom?
I'd rather not make that trade. I will say some of the scenes were quite beautiful. The sand, yeah. I got enthralled with that. And then I said, oh, I wonder how much of that is computer generated. And then I fell back into it again.
Oh, good.
If you can appreciate that, you know, a little bit of a skeptic, but the sand and the formations were really beautiful.
Yeah. And what about the Emperor's mirrored ball ship?
Well, that was pretty. Yeah.
Ooh, that was a stunner. Oh, and what about the planet with the black sun, where as soon as you go outside, everything's in black and white?
That was weird. I didn't really understand that very well.
But it looked cool, didn't it?
It looked cool. It really did. Yes, it did. The costuming was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
A little glitz and a little what you would expect, drab and whatnot, a little bit of that. But I thought the costuming was really clever and good.
What about that Princess Irulan? Every time you saw her, she had more stuff dangling in front of her face. Like at first, she's just wearing this like little face shell and you can see. And then just every time she comes back, there's a more ornate... She was going to be like she was inside a jellyfish almost by the end.
It was quite a transformation from beginning
gorgeous,
to end.
Gorgeous, though, I thought.
Yes. Yes.
I thought they did Princess Irulan just right. I was very happy with that.
You have to explain to me the sort of marital / sexual lifestyle.
Right.
Did I know the Atreides men?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to give away the very end of the movie by talking about that.
Okay.
We are not too careful about that on the podcast, but this is something that happens like in the last minute. So,
did I ruin it by saying there's a world?
No, I think it's. No, that's fine. Like, yeah, there is a war that breaks out, but. No, I don't think we spoiled too much, but this is like a character thing, so that's why I didn't
quote-unquote spoil that.
The Atreides men are not great marriers, let's put it that way. Neither Paul nor his father really respects the institution of marriage the way you might hope.
But they're not pigs.
They're not pigs, they're just political, right?
They just run their lives a certain way. Jenna said the book is a bit tricky to get into, to read, to understand. She's tried several times and has not been successful.
I recommend reading it with a pen in your hand so that you can underline sparingly, but underline and make notes in the margins as you go along. I got about 2 chapters in and I was loving it. I did not have a hard time getting into it, but I also realized this book is dense and it has a lot of respect for the reader and expects the attention of the reader. So I did, I haven't done this since I was in school, but I did start reading it still for entertainment, but from more of a perspective of study, I would say that that helps. It comes with a glossary in the back. Don't be afraid to flip back to that. It is an epic vision, and that's why it was so hard to film. I mean, the main character has these visions of the future and perceives time in a way that is practically impossible to render in the temporal medium of film. Film time advances the way we expect it to. In literature, you can create perspectives that don't adhere as tightly to cause and effect, and Paul perceives time that way. And you get tastes of that. You know, you get blurry visions of the future and images that are picked out, and you get the sense of it. Like, I think he did a great job with it, but also, like, you read the book and it's like, how would they put some of this stuff on film?
Right.
And the answer is the stuff that he couldn't, he didn't. And there's so much left that it still makes for a fantastic movie.
Well, I would agree with you. Again, I didn't love it. I don't love this genre. But I thought it was, I mean, I could consume it.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you would. I mean, the visuals, and the director, made some waves recently. I don't even know if a wave, but got some attention recently for saying that he hates dialogue. And of course he meant this somewhat facetiously, but he also meant it earnestly in the sense that he perceives film as a primarily, and if he had his druthers, exclusively visual medium. He's creating visuals, and even though the film does have quite a bit of dialogue, it's not, on the other hand, terribly prolix, and it has so many memorable images. I bring up the Emperor's giant mirrored ball of a ship just because I was stunned by this image that played out across the screen, and by the black sun planet. I remembered visuals more than I remembered conversational exchanges or what have you. And so I think anybody can enjoy that part of it.
And I also enjoyed the sword play, or they were short though. Are they called swords or daggers?
Daggers
that for some reason, for me, it was filmed so that you could feel the power and strength that was needed to fight with those. Again, I kept waiting for something like lightsabers. You know, that's all a big mush in my head, that there's going to be pew pew and lightsabers. But it is not like that. And there is a bit of, more than a bit of this dagger fighting that is so powerful, and you can feel how much strength is needed to wield the dagger and make your play for your opponent. It was pretty powerful, I thought.
Yeah, that fight between Paul and Fade Rautha Harkonnen at the end is really well filmed. And man, Fade Rautha, I just loved that. You know, he's this character that comes in, even in the book, I think he comes in like 2/3 of the way through. And you're almost like, geez, and are you kidding me? Another member of this family? And I thought we hated the other guy, the other meathead.
Yeah. Now we hate this guy.
Now this guy comes in. But Fade Rautha is, even though he, well, I guess I won't speak too much about that. But Fade Rautha is a great character, and I love what is the guy's name? Austin Harper. If I got that wrong, I'm sorry, but the guy who plays him is really good and speaks like the Baron, right? Like adapted his voice to sound like a Sarsgaard.
Yeah.
I forget which Sarsgaard plays that the old Baron, but I thought it was funny. He made his voice sound like that, and it really worked for me.
It did. I looked at him like the bully in high school that you always just wanted to.
Oh, good.
Fail, and because he was so nasty, but and took such delight in his nastiness that you just wanted to see him fail.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's a pretty clear-cut bad guy. They don't come much better than him. What about Christopher Walken as the Emperor? I loved that choice too. The casting all over this movie was just inspiring.
I thought that was unusual.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Since his part was so minimal, I wondered what intrigued him about that.
I'm sure there was a paycheck to intrigue him, but
now.
I thought it was a great choice for someone who is, this is a guy who's been on the throne for a long time, and yet it's clear in the book and in the movie that events have evolved out of his control, and he's only somewhat aware of it. He's not like foggy or addled, but he depends a lot on his daughter, the aforementioned Princess Irulan, to see things and calculate moves for him. And he's grateful for it, but he's kind of fading. And I'm not saying Christopher Walken is fading, but he has always been a person who seems somewhat disconnected from our world, right? Like, that's part of his mystique, his whole image.
Right.
So I thought it made total sense and I thought he did a good job. He doesn't have a lot of scene chewing to do, but this is the last scene too, but there's a scene at the end where he has a really emotional moment with Paul, and I thought Walken played it really well. I'm sorry to be so cryptic, folks, but if you haven't seen it yet, I don't want to ruin all the final moments for you. Okay, so here's my story about going to see Dune. As the hype built up for this movie, I had initially thought, like, oh, we'll wait till it's been in theaters for a week or so, and then we'll go see it. I wanted to go see it with my buddy Steve. And then the night it came out, I felt like everybody online was talking about it. And I just was like, I got to see this movie. And so I got tickets at the local multiplex, and you click on your assigned seats to get the tickets. And I got these tickets the night before, and there were no seats claimed. And I was like, that's odd. Everybody in the world wants to see this movie. Shows you maybe I live in a little bit of a bubble, but we show up again. This is a sign of my eagerness that the showtime is 9 PM and we have assigned seats. And yet I want to show up there at like 8:30, which we do, and we walk into the theater, and there are two people way up in the back, and that's it. And we're seated like somewhere in the middle, and we're sitting there for a little bit, and it's so quiet in there. Steve says two more people are going to come in, and they'll sit right in front of us. Well, wouldn't you know it, like another 10 minutes go by, and then in toddles in this couple who plops themselves down in the row directly in front of us. They were staggered by one seat. So Steve now had the boyfriend in front of him and the girlfriend sitting. And they, as they were sitting down, there was a little awkwardness. It wasn't like they just, stomped. Like, they obviously had assigned seats too.
Right.
And they weren't sure what to do. But not since this one segment I did at the Daily Show, which is a story I'll tell another time, did I have to work so hard not to laugh, because it was just so funny that Steve's prediction had come true. And I don't know, I'm a little bit of a connoisseur of awkwardness. So I just found because like now we couldn't really have a conversation with each other even, because it felt like we were, so both of the pairs were like struggling to get a conversation going, because it just felt like we were almost at the dinner table with these people. But we're supposed to have our own space. Steve also predicted that people would come in, sit in our row and start talking, which also came to pass. And they spoke all through the trailers. And you're thinking, okay, they'll speak through the trailers, but then after that, they're going to shut up, right?
Right.
The movie starts. About 10 seconds in, they start chattering about whatever. And the fella who had sat down right in front of us turns, looks over his shoulder, and says in quite a booming voice, "Be quiet."
I love it.
And they did. Now, there was a little bit of looking at their phone, and they kept getting up and going out and coming back in.
Looking at your phone for when you're at the movies?
Well, they didn't really care about the movie. It was a bunch of, I don't know, bunch of 20-something dumbasses, and early 20s, I would guess. Okay. And they were just screwing around for the night, and they didn't really care about the movie. But they were quiet for the remainder of the film in terms of talking, and like we were able to enjoy the movie. When the lights came up for the credits and Steve and I got up to leave, I tapped the guy on the shoulder and said, "Hey, man, thanks. I appreciate it." Because, you know, when you put yourself out there, you're worried everybody's going to be like, "Shut up, man." Or whatever. But he really snapped that theater line. He made clear he was excited to see this movie and he was not going to have anybody mess with it. Because, you know, I would have sat there for 5 or 10 minutes thinking like maybe they'll calm down once the movie really gets going or something exciting will happen and they'll get into it. But pulling off the Band-Aid was a great move by him. Yeah. So theater goer, I salute you. Thank you for sitting right in front of us and telling everyone to shut up during Dune. Mom, what is your grade for Dune Part 2?
Well, I had a hard time with this one. I think I would give it a B minus because I think I could sit through it again.
Okay. Thanks for going to see that. I know it's a long movie. I know going to the movies can be a pain in the butt, and I know it's not your kind of movie, but sometimes we get to watch something I'm real excited about, and I sure do appreciate it.
Definitely.
Mom, do you have a recommendation this week?
I do. I do have a recommendation. It is a book. It's called The Upstairs Delicatessen by Dwight Garner. This is a book that is not choppy, but as I'm going to describe it, it's going to sound like it's choppy. But it's a book about food and eating, and it's all has all quotes or paragraphs or sentences from books that have an impressive or interesting scene about eating, eating food. It was very interesting to me. And at the back of the book, they gave a list of where all the quotes and phrases and paragraphs and stories came from. So if something really resonates with you, there's a whole nother book waiting for you to read. I've never read a book like this and I really enjoyed it. It's the secondary title is The Upstairs Delicatessen on Eating, Reading, Reading About Eating, and Eating While Reading.
That's quite a mouthful. Wow, I thought Dune was intimidating. Upstairs Delicatessen, forget it. Oof, gonna need two pens for this one. That's The Upstairs Delicatessen by Dwight Garner. Is that right, Mom?
Yep.
Okay. Run, don't walk to your local library to check that one out. That'll do it for this edition of Pop Mom. This episode of the podcast was edited by Scott Jones. Thank you, Scott. Mom and I will be back soon, of course, to talk about more pop culture. What should we talk about next time, though, Mom?
Something interesting.
Something interesting. You heard it here first, and you'll hear it here next, we hope. If you enjoy the show, tell your friends. We love to get email, too. It's popmom@ological.net. Talk to us about anything, including your favorite kind of cake. Nobody's told us what their favorite kind of cake is. I think people don't listen all the way to the end of the patter. So if you're the one person who listens all the way to the end, well, tell us what your favorite kind of cake is.
What if
why.
We gave away a prize at the end?
I just want one person to tell me now. We're not giving away any prizes.
No, I'm saying, though, what if we were giving away prizes? People would miss out on it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, your prize, if you tell us your favorite kind of cake, is Mom will email you back. There's your prize. But you don't have to talk to us about cake. Talk to us about anything because we love you. And Mom and I will talk to you again next week. Bye for now, Mom.
Bye, Johnny. I love you.
Love you, too.